Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here talking story every Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country 107.7 FM and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And if you don't listen on Sunday mornings, the podcast will be online at lava1053.com and koacountry1077.com. Just click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. This morning, my guest again is Hawaii County Mayor Harry Kim. Mayor Kim was my guest 3 months ago, just days after he was inaugurated as Hawaii County's mayor. And today we'll get an update on some of his key priorities. Good morning. Aloha, Mayor Kim.
Good morning. Has it been that long?
You were mayor from 2000 through 2007, 8 years ago. Now, 3 months into the job again, what is surprising you? What's different from what you were expecting?
Nothing was different too much of what I was expecting. It's the type of problems, the growth of those problems. I first identified the gap between the have and the have-nots, believe it or not, in 1981. I made that public that this is a great concern of mine. And again in the early 2000s in Honolulu on a television station, fearing that, boy, we better watch out. Now that I'm here again, when we talk throughout this morning, you see the emphasis on that. It is a tremendous, tremendous change since I've been here last, as far as the number of people. Other type of problems that were not a problem when I was here last, like, you know, the short-term stay problem. We never had that as far as a real problem. We had it, but
well, when you say short-term stay, what do you mean?
Oh, the homes rented as hotels and those kind of problems. It's not new, but the immensity of it is new, and that's the difference.
Harry, that was one, Mayor Kim, that was one of the things.
Harry's better.
Everybody calls you Harry. One of the things I did want to ask you about was this issue of the haves and the have-nots. And first, define terms. Who are the haves?
It is a thing that's becoming more and more used. It used to be those of at risk, the homeless that we use today. Answering the question of who the haves are, those that are lifestyle in regards to having a place to live, able to pay their bills, you know, is not a problem. The have-nots, unfortunately, are those that are living almost month-to-month or have no more than 2 or 3 months reserve, that if anything happens in regards to one end or the other end, one end is expenses and the other end is revenues, they're in real trouble.
You have spoken about your desire to narrow the gap between the haves and the have-nots. On, let's say, a national level, economists say a way to redistribute wealth is to tax those with a little more money and somehow provide services for those with less. But for Hawaii County, what do you specifically see as the way to narrow that gap between the haves and the have-nots?
One of the awareness things of time past is in regards to the problem of the have-nots. I just talked, and I'll leave his name anonymous for now, a very wealthy and influential person trying to get their help because that's what we're going to need. The bottom line is the amount of money you make per day, per month, per year versus your expenses. And as long as that doesn't change dramatically to get them into the haves instead of have-nots, the problem will continue to grow. I used this analogy talking to our governor last week when I was talking to him about our problems, our priorities, that the gap in the number of people of the have-nots or at risk is a better term used today, at risk of being homeless, is growing tremendously. And the only way to resolve it is both ends of the candle. One is to make sure that we do not add to their living cost expenses. And with government, that's what you have to spend on taxes and what you have to spend on bare necessities that government costs. The other is try to work with the industries of business to make them aware of this and to help where they can, including of salaries. I'll give a poor example. It's a good example. Not too long ago, there were large news about Walmart. I have decided to increase the salaries of the individuals. Quite a dramatic increase as far as Walmart. And there's a lot of publicity in regards to minimum wage and what it costs and what they have to make just to rent an apartment. Those are awareness things and action things that we have to do more and more of. And it's not an easy battle. The inflation and cost of living stays well ahead of what that person earns as a living.
Well, it always does. And I guess the issue, I look at myself as one of the haves. I mean, I have a home and I'm not worried that I'm not going to have a home tomorrow. But I also don't like the idea of the money that I work hard for being taken from me in some way, taxation or some other way, to support others, just because then that puts me at risk.
It's a very tough but very good point. Yesterday we were talking to some people from Oahu, and we were talking because he said he heard me talk about have-nots. And he said, I'm a have-not, and I'm a school teacher. I'm a have-not, and my wife's a school teacher. The have-nots have changed. The middle-class definition have changed. And I think if I take your home away today, you didn't have that, and you have exactly the same element of your job and income, you'd be very close to the have-nots. What he was talking to me about of the depression, and he was talking to me because we're friends, for one, not very long-term or social friends, but just acquaintances, more or less. And he wanted to see what was available on the island of Oahu. And he said, Jenna, it is very sad when most of your friends were like him. This is, again, Oahu, both husband and wife were teachers. And he said, we have no hope whatsoever of ever owning a home in Oahu. They have children. Right now, they have made a decision. If they ever want that hope again and the dream to be a possibility, they have to move. But that's their home from birth. But they've made a decision. They want the home someday. They want to be able to have a little extra money. They're going to see where they can move to, including the mainland. I cannot imagine, but I can see some of the turmoil of sitting down with your spouse or yourself and saying, I got to move out of here. The point of all of this, Sherry, is that that number has grown to, it is a frightening number. You take this island, I look at stats because I have to know who I'm dealing with, what I'm dealing with, and your obvious question is going to be, what are my priorities? And, you know, to see that this island is identified in the last census, I'll use round numbers, 2013 versus the end of 2016. The numbers of homeless in 2013 was in the 500 range. Year ending December 2016, the best conservative count was 1,400. That's in 3 years. And the way things are going, that number will increase as far as percentage. So you can see where the focus concerns are.
And that's here on this island.
Yeah. And also the same study showed that for whatever reason, the island of Hawaii, in the state of Hawaii, has the greatest percentage per capita in the United States of America of the homeless being of families. In other words, kids and women.
When we talk about homeless, clearly they are definitely on the way have not scale. There was a story in West Hawaii Today on Thursday that said that there is a plan to move the homeless folks out of Old Airport Park, that the plan is to close the park down for 2 days and move everybody out. And I guess my first question is, where are they supposed to go? Old Airport Park is not a place for people to set up permanent residence, but where are they supposed to go?
First of all, it's our responsibility as a whole. You know that better than most, Sherry, of what my job is. I did not read that article, so I'll just, because I was interviewed, so I can kind of guess what they focused on. But I tried to talk to them that this was not a program just to clean a park. This is a brainchild of people or energies of people. I know the responsibilities of just clearing out something for the purpose. So if your purpose is to move the homeless, then that's ridiculous to do that. All you did is shuffle them from this to that and solve nothing except a clean park for a few days at best. And so we try to make it clear, and we are working with all the agencies, that there has been no definite date set yet.
Actually, Harry, I did talk this morning as we record this interview. It actually is Thursday.
Oh.
And Charmaine Kamaka told me the dates selected have been April 19th and 20th. I talked to the police department to confirm that they know that date, which actually is an intriguing date because it's Easter week.
Oh.
It's a time of high tourism. It's also the week of Mary Monarch. And, you know, I'm just sort of pondering why we would do a big homeless sweep in the middle of a time where we know for sure we're going to have a lot of tourists. given that I already know also, there's no space left in our temporary shelters as they exist today. And it makes me a little uncomfortable to think about rousting folks without a solution.
Well, I'm glad you feel uncomfortable because so do I.
Well, I'm sure you do. This is not easy.
No,
I know that. I'm not suggesting it is.
I'm not going to wish wash on that date, but, you know, I talked to her early in the week. At that time, you know, she said this is a tentative date because we have a lot of other things to get in line. For all of that, a part of the energies, we have somebody by the name of Lance Naimi working with all the other people trying to work on that segment of the problem in regards to options for them. I promise you we will not initiate anything that would just shove them out in the streets. And this is going to be island-wide to try to do this, working with all agencies and identify resources we need, identify resources we have and who's working on what. And even if it's just like a temporary site for them to go to as we work on other things.
That was something, Mayor Kim, that came up during the candidate forum, suggestions that maybe the county needs to establish a place, a warehouse, a lot, a place where people can camp. Because clearly we're not getting rid of the problem by just moving folks. That's what they do on Oahu. They do have this sit-lie ban. It doesn't mean people disappear. By the way, I spoke with your Lance Naimi today, Deputy Director of Housing. The man has a great heart, and he clearly sees the issues, and he said he's working with task forces to determine who the folks are, and hopefully taking all the information that's been gathered over the last 8 years. But he definitely said, I just want you to understand, we know there's no immediate solution. So he wasn't trying to lead me to believe there was.
I handpicked him to work with me. He was with Lily Okolani Trust, administrator for many years. I knew I needed him because of exactly what you said, knowing him. I didn't know him professionally, but I would always see him, things like selling Christmas trees for the wives, you know, all community things. So he's a good man, and he was assigned for that.
Switching gears, but to possibly a related topic, is crime. When I told folks I was going to be talking with you, one of the questions that came in was concern about crime and sometimes violent crime, particularly in rural areas like Kau, Puna, and even the farm environments. And you know, on the east side of the island, there tends to be more crime. And that said, it's also in the current budget that you're going to cut police overtime. So the concern is, what's your thinking about ways to combat crime so we don't end up with an island that's different from the way it has been, which is fairly crime-free or crime-less?
And unfortunately, crime stats go up when times are hard. And times are getting hard for a lot of people, for one. But another, going back to stats, of the percentage of people who are homeless or having a very hard time but are not homeless, how long have they been here? Where do they come from? That is a figure that's also very eye-opening, that people coming here. It's common sense. When I was talking to the people at one of the schools here, and they told me that they moved to Hawaiian Ocean View Estates, as you say, Kau. I said, the new community said it takes them about hour 15, hour and a half every day. I said, I know why they live there. They told me, because land is cheap and available. It's the only thing they could afford. I appreciate this question about Kau because it's part of Kona. It's part of the Big Island, obviously, as far as people. Kau work in Kona every day. It's just almost sad or depressing when you talk to these people about the problems in Kau. We had a community meeting 3-4 weeks ago. Vast majority of the question was exactly what you just stated, the crime there. You know, we want more police protection. We need this, we need that. We've got a darn good police department. We've got a darn good police chief. And in regards to your question of overtime, this is a preliminary cut. I don't know what the final cut would be, the final budget. We have approximately a little less than a month now before the second budget goes in. And we'll see how the departments adjust. We do not just make arbitrary cut and say this, because they know we cannot, in certain departments, cut certain kind of services. They will have to take a look at how and when and who takes overtime. They're going to have to see what other things can be adjusted. All those things will be reviewed. But I know the priorities of police, fire, basically, I don't even want to call them fire department. I should call them emergency medical people. because the number of calls they get is tremendous, especially from districts like Pune and Kau. They depend on the fire department for almost their medical services. These are things that we are aware. Our job is to know the community. Our job is to know the impact in regards to everything we do on budget, and we will make sure we will know the difference between nice to have and need to have.
Budget's hugely challenging, and this year we can expect that every employee union is going to get raises. As that is going on, the state is threatening to remove our second largest budget source, which is around $19 million in transient accommodation tax, the hotel tax, which I'm totally disappointed in any Big Island legislator who actually thinks that's a good idea, because the purpose of that was really to reimburse the county for the money we spend to service visitors, whether it's at our parks or the 911 or whatever. Given that, and given the only real sources of revenue that you as mayor control would be property tax, do you see it's going to be likely to require a raise in the property tax rates this year? Or is it too early to tell because we're still preliminary?
It is preliminary, but it is not too early for very serious discussions of what all options are. I'm going to go back to the TAT. Even as you just said, and even as you and I are talking, the meeting before this was a conference call with the three mayors. You know, in regards to the TAT, I wish everybody on this island, I wish all legislatures would know what you just said. Go and look at the history of the formation of that tax. We are supposed to get, according to their study, to divvy up a percentage so you don't go and fight the battle every year. On that, stated clear recognition why this tax was formed. As all people of government know, that the ideal is to get your some of your revenues from outside in, you know, to help you in your expenses, not just taxing the local people who live here, and especially when many of the services are to provide other peoples our visitors. And last time I talked to the Coca-Cola Chamber of Commerce, you know what I regretted most of that meeting? That I didn't beg them to bug their legislatures. I asked them.
Yeah, but you didn't say which two legislators were sponsoring.
I didn't want to do that, but I wanted to.
It's two Big Island legislators who proposed cutting the TAT taxes.
I know.
Can you name them?
I wish not to. Coca-Cola Chamber of Commerce people. Look at the numbers of people was there. If half of them, just half of them, wrote a letter to all of their legislatures or the governor's office, which I was there last week talking to him about this, I guarantee you would make an impact. I guarantee it would make an impact.
Is it too late or is that?
No, it
so
is.
Even since,
right now is
okay,
a perfect time
so
to do it.
Today we have a task, write to our state representatives, seven of them on this island, write to our state senators, we have four of them, and write to the governor that we need to have the transient accommodation tax left with the counties as was the original plan. I mean, that's simple. We're not asking for more than our share, are we?
No, absolutely. This is, remember, their recommendation that certain percentage be given to the counties to do their job in regards to servicing the tourist industry.
Mayor Kim, speaking of budget and finance, you have a new finance director, Collins Tomei, who came to you from Territorial Savings.
Yes, he did.
But I don't see Mr. Tomei talking to the county council and to all the hearings about budget issues. I see Deanna Sacco. She's not the director of finance. So.
She was, and she's the deputy now. And I must have had 10, 12, 15 meetings with finance. Most all, if not all of them, is a directive to Collins. And he brings who he feels will help him. And sometimes it's Nancy. Well, Nancy is another division head. And he knows he's new. He knows he has to learn. One thing I like about him is he does know that. But if you see him in operations during meetings, you see that he is in control. But when he is called before the council in certain things, he knows that, and I'm glad for it, truthfully, because they recognize him. He knows that he can go to council and show he's the person in charge. But what he's showing is at this point, these are the people he's learning from, these are the people he's discussing of the issue. And to me, it's just a style, and I have no problems with it.
Well, it just sort of felt like this is a case where a female is not given the title nor the responsibility nor the pay, yet she's the one who's doing the job.
Well, I'm sorry for that interpretation because that's not in this case. And since we brought it up, I'll show you the commitment in regards to Diane. I made a blanket policy that no heads of departments will be maintained. You get your own team. What in my policy that the mayor stays out of a lot of things. All contracts, construction projects, we stay out of it. You let the people who are in charge and you set the rules how they do it. All department heads select their own deputies. You know your strengths, you know your weaknesses, fill the gap. They even appoint their own secretaries. And even on that, a commitment that the mayor's office will not be involved in the selection of any employee in regards to the perception or image of what's going on. Diane, I owe her a lot outside of her knowledge, her personality, demeanor, working with people, respect of others. But she took a tremendous pay cut to come back as deputy or director. This was after calling, searching who he needs. And he asked that if he could talk to her, and obviously he could. And he picked her. I won't say the amount, but she was losing money being the director, much less the deputy. How many people do you know will do that?
There are a lot of people who are dedicated public servants, frankly, Mayor Kim. So I think a lot of folks who work for the county actually do that.
You know that. So I'm talking to your audience here. We owe her because her and others, I'll take my deputy for planning. Same thing. He was even offered, would you consider a head? I said, no. The only thing of what you said bothers me a little bit is I promise you that nothing is taken advantage of because she's a woman. The advantage I'm taking of is her generosity of willing to come back.
Mayor Kim, for years there have been complaints about slowness in getting building permits, and that's been a problem that Mayor Kinoy and his administration worked on. You worked on it last time. Now what I'm hearing from contractors with business really being up is that building permit process is going very well. Now the issue is inspections, that when they need an inspection, sometimes they can't get it in a timely manner, which for them holds up the building process, maybe make their workers not work, so they maybe don't get paid, or the contractor's paying for something not being done. Is this something that is now high on the priority list for Public Works to take a look at how inspections can be speeded up since building is going at a pretty good clip now?
Oh, yeah. First of all, each department, we're told what the major problems that we must address immediately in planning and building because they're so involved in regards to the permit system, obviously. This I promise still, if you think it's better now, it will be much better because they're working on certain other changes. In regards to the problem you talked about, that's a problem that I think we have to see what else can be done because that involves literally a guy going out on the field and making a field inspection. That involves Department of Health, anything of septic, the waste involves the state or the private people that they hire. And those are the things we're trying to see, what can we do? The key here is very simple, and I'm not trying to pass the buck here. Permits and inspection, all it does is say, we do hereby certify if you've met all the requirements. And the reason for that, again, is simple. It's liability in case something happens to that building or whatever, and people get hurt financially or physically. They look for people to sue. Yeah, who's to blame? And so nobody wants to sign that. And so the inspector knows the importance of his job. And if it's he looks and he knows it's complete, he says, okay, if you met all requirements. And his signature going on. We're trying to see what else we can do that can involve more the private sector, the builder, contractor. We will work on that. We will address it, and we are addressing it to see what we can do.
Okay. One other quick Public Works question. We understand now that Laco Street, which is on the Kona side of the island, now there's a private contractor involved who will extend it from the Lutheran Church down to Ali'i Drive. And a couple of residents in that area asked me to ask you, when the previous effort to extend Laco Street was going on under Bruce McClure, who was your Public Works Director 8 years ago, there was a neighborhood committee to talk about ways to slow the traffic, because Laco Street goes through residential. Is that something that under the public-private partnership you've established that Public Works will still be doing, looking at traffic calming?
Yeah, as you know, not simple things, but those things in regards to streets, that the most common recommendation are speed humps. Those things need community involvement, community approval. Those things and other things will continue to be looked at.
Most people on the island have the very highest regard for Hawaii County Civil Defense, and I know that is something that's near and dear to your heart. When you first came into office at the beginning of December, you essentially put them on an embargo where they had to go through you for all communications. The question is now, Hawaii County Civil Defense, you have a permanent person in there. Are they able to react quickly to do the job, to get information out when there's something to get out? And I ask this because I know during that 1 week, for example, on the Kona side of the island, there was a bomb scare that really messed up traffic, but they weren't able to issue anything, although we got the information out on the radio thanks to the police. But now, if there is something, do they need to go through you or can they act independently?
You know, that was so misunderstood and miscommunicated what the directive was. All it was that all communications will follow the procedure in regards to be reviewed for accuracy. And certain kind of things were blanket, so they just fill in the form. It was all policy changes that had to be reviewed. But that's not just civil defense. It's every department. Anytime you make policy changes that affect the people, it has to be screened to make sure of accuracy. And it's not just content for that. It is from, you know, you do not just throw something in public and effective tomorrow this change will be made. We were trying to emphasize that lead-in time for business or individuals must be given and obviously clearly understood what the changes are. Somehow that simple message went, well, civil defense has to pass everything to the mayor for clearance. Now, there were some problems in the past because of change of style. Each employee, including the new one, Talmadge Magno, each employee was told to identify problems of the agency. Each of the employees were told suggestions on what they need to address it because this is a very critical agency. Each one have told me they need training. They're talking about intensive training. I spend every morning at civil defense. My day starts at 6:30 in the morning, and I leave at 7:30. That's a burden, but it's not a burden because they requested it. And it's the only time I could fit in. And I think this agency, I've got good people there. I don't know if you met Talmadge. He is an outstanding young man who was a head ranger at National Park.
Good reputation.
And very nice demeanor about him. They will do their job. They ask for training, naturally because of past experience. They ask that I give it to them. And that's what I'm doing.
So if there was an earthquake at this very moment in Chile and it looked like a tsunami warning for us, they could issue the alert without fail. Or if there were an earthquake here and we had an immediate tsunami.
And those are coincidences you said that because this morning I told them that be prepared for what we call a tabletop exercise. And I said, I'm just going to come in and say, earthquake, execute. They are to write in a bullet form what each one will do. That's one way. The other, I'll just point my finger. What will you do? Those are things we're doing. And yes, without doubt, they will do their job.
I know that Mauna Kea is one of your very favorite topics. Many people wrote in with questions that related to Mauna Kea. One form of it was that on Maui, they were able to get a new telescope constructed without the kind of confrontations that have been happening here. Should TMT be approved to go forward, what's your thinking about the best way to proceed so that we can have a happy island with a good, positive astronomy community?
Sure, I'm glad you used the word a happy island, because that's the problem. I met with the governor, I met with the attorney general, I met with all different times, obviously. I met with almost all of the observatories as a group and individual. I met with some of the people funding the TMT. I don't think anybody wants where we seem to be headed, a confrontation. What is happening now at the Judge Amano hearing has concluded. What is not finished is the challenge in regards to subleasing, which I'd make another contested case here in process. I do not know what the state plans are. because everybody's in that limbo. What will Judge Amano rule? And what will be the ruling whether the contested case is going to be needed for the sublease? So that's how much of a limbo we're in. What is not in limbo is a consortium of the five countries of China, Japan, Canada, India, and the United States have stated very openly, we have to seek an alternate site, Canary Islands. What is very clear, and they made it public, is that the window of opportunity to be here on the island is getting to be very short. They have to move forward. And that's how touchy the situation is today. Please remember that the people of the TMT have nothing to do with the controversy now. They were just people from outside said the best place in the world for what we want to do is Mauna Kea. We would like to lease a site. Here's a proposal. Here's the bond. Here's the money, everything else. And now the controversy started in regards to permitting. They're not the bad guys. They're just scientists who have identified this as the best place in the world. Where we go from here, I am involved because I've been approached by people that questions in regards to Mauna Kea. And I told them of what my vision and dream was of this place. And it still stands. And I believe the TMT is an opportunity for the world, especially for Hawaii Island, to be the center of a discovery of mankind, of the universe. This is what they tell me. I believe that Mauna Kea, according to them, is second to none in the entire world to do this. They have said because of that and because of proximity to infrastructures or for families and our work, there's no better place. This is good for mankind. I believe this is good for Hawaii, good for students. I believe it's good for the economy. It's a kind of development I see that I think is the best for any place because it does not take away land and preciousness of water and those things. I believe we are going the wrong path to get it. The only way that this will be resolved in a way that you said a happy place is that we back off from our hostilities of each other and really sit down and see how this can be resolved. I beg the governor, the attorney general, and others, we've got to do this. If we don't, the risk of the consequences is too much for me to bear.
Have you defined your vision of the Mauna Kea Park? Can you succinctly tell us where you are in defining that vision?
Mauna Kea can be and should be a monument for the world, especially at this time, for mankind's quest of knowledge to make us a better people. Mauna Kea can be the international monument to be a quest of knowledge enough people to make us better stewards of this land. Mauna Kea, because of Hawaii, of heritage of the Hawaiian people, can be a monument for a quest of us to be better people for peace on earth, relationship. Because of the Hawaiian being the first people of the nation of Hawaii, because of their, for lack of a better word, of their DNA of warmth and peace of people that I've never met in my life that even comes close to who they are. And from that, the development of the cosmopolitan race of Hawaii, meaning people belonging to the world. I believe that the five countries who are funding this totally embrace what I just said, that this whole mountain symbolizes that, that anytime you say Hawaii, anytime you say Mauna Kea, anytime you say Hawaii Island, that will stand out among anything else in the world. There is that place on earth that symbolizes all those things that I just said. And therefore, to create this entire mountain symbolizing that, all the specifics of governing and all those things are those things that you need to work out.
And who's working that out?
Nobody, because first you've got to have people accept this. Then from there, you work out, how do we do this? But I'm just one person. This is what I wish for because I was asked.
You're one person. You're the mayor of Hawaii County.
I'm not the family of the regents. I'm not in the family of the University of Hawaii, Mauna Kea Management. I'm not in the family of the astronomers. And it was just the mayor answering a question. But this is what I really feel can be, should be, and hopefully will be.
Thank you so much, Mayor Harry Kim. Anything final before we say aloha?
I love being here, but I got to go back to work.
Okay, go back to work. Thank you so much to Hawaii County Mayor Kim. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. I'll see you next Sunday morning when we bring you the compelling story of pilot Sydney Uemoto, who landed her disabled plane 25 miles off the Kona coast. We hear the whole story from Sydney and her mom, Andrina. Until next Sunday, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.